Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on YouTube. First on the docket today, Lori Vallow's attorney tweets, and you won't believe it. Second, an officer in the Breonna Taylor case speaks, and he has a lot to say. Third, a grand juror on the Breonna Taylor case speaks, says no murder charges were ever presented. Fourth, former deputy performs an exorcism on his son. What could possibly go wrong? Fifth, Jose Baez is on a new case. Sixth, Scott Peterson is going to court this Friday. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. If you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content, and as always, leave us a comment below. First on the docket, Lori Vallow's attorney is tweeting. That's right, and you're not going to believe what he's saying. Mark Means, the attorney for Lori Vallow, has made a couple of tweets today. The first one has a little gif of little mice running away, and it says, "As I prepare the defense for Lori Vallow, I am learning that persons like Melanie Gibbs and her boyfriend, David Warwick, appear to have been eagerly involved in more than they let on. If you know of something, say something." So apparently he's conducting his investigation in this particular case on Twitter. Then he also tweets at the same time, which I think is the most significant one, "The defense lacks the resources of the prosecution," referring specifically to the state of Idaho, the Attorney General's office, the FBI, the Chandler Police Department, the Madison County Sheriff's Department, the Fremont County Sheriff's Department, and don't forget the Rexburg Police. "We need the persons of knowledge to come forward." Well, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think that means? It could mean a couple of things. Well, first, I don't think I would be out there tweeting about my case, particularly telling the world that you don't have the resources. Yes, you will never have, nor will any defendant ever have the resources that the state has. But actually asking, "We need the persons of knowledge to come forward," what the hell does that mean? Does it mean there's some sort of witness out there that knows all, that knows exactly what happened to JJ and Ty Lee? Or is he saying, "Man, I need as much help as I can get because there's a bunch of stuff I have neither the time, the energy, nor the resources to go through," which would possibly include all of the data that has been provided by the FBI. Needless to say, you don't want to show your cards. The "oh, woe is me" defense has never worked in a court of law, as far as I can recall, because every defendant would do that. If he does not have the resources to properly conduct an investigation in this particular case, Mr. Means should withdraw and allow the Office of the Public Defender to take over so that she can receive an adequate defense. And so, therefore, if there is a trial and a conviction, the first issue raised in post-conviction relief matters will not be ineffective assistance of counsel. It's about doing the right thing for your client. It's not about getting your 15 minutes of fame. We'll see how that case continues to go about, but that is certainly not an investigation. Please help. Please, if you know something, we don't have the resources. No one ever has the resources to go up against the government. That's why it says the people of the state of Idaho versus Lori Vallow. And that means all the resources that come with the state. But you still have to be able to mount a defense. And if you don't have the resources to hire an investigator, that's when it's time to get off the case. Next on the docket, an officer involved in the Breonna Taylor case speaks out, and he has a lot to say. Jonathan Mattingly, he is one of the Louisville Metro Police sergeants who was actually shot while attempting to serve a search warrant in the narcotics investigation, has given an interview to the press. And he states a couple of things. First, he says, This had nothing to do with race, nothing at all. Mattingly described publicly for the first time in his interview what happened the night that they attempted to search a search warrant before 1 a.m. on March 13th at Breonna Taylor's apartment in Louisville, looking for drugs and cash as part of a larger narcotics operation. He said there's a lot of misinformation out there, such as that the police were at the wrong apartment, that Taylor wasn't listed on the search warrant, and that she was asleep in her bed when she was shot. Mattingly goes on to say, this is nothing relatable to the George Floyd case. They are completely unrelated, and this, once again, he says, has nothing to do with race. Absolutely rejects the notion that a lot of people think that somehow the police are going out there hunting somebody down. This is not kneeling on the neck. It's nothing like that. Now, obviously, Taylor's death and subsequent lack of charges against the officers has ignited 146 days of consecutive protests in Louisville and touched off demonstrations across the country. Mattingly said, for example, George Floyd's death was a case of misconduct and abuse of power. Taylor's death was neither, he said. He blames the situation that led to the riots on the convenient narrative for the attorneys, and specifically mentions the Ben Crumps and the Sam Aguirres to inflame people to get the end result which they wanted, which, as we've talked about, was that the city paid the Breonna Taylor family $12 million to settle their claims against the city. Mattingly did go on to say that it's every cop's biggest fear is that they would shoot an innocent person. He reflected on a warrant from a decade earlier during which a suspect shot at him through a door. Mattingly didn't shoot back, and he later learned a baby and a little girl were asleep inside the apartment. He states, you want to do the right thing. You want to be the one who is protecting, not up here looking to do any damage to anybody's families. That's not what anybody desires in their work. He states, she didn't deserve to die, referring to Breonna Taylor. She didn't do anything to deserve a death sentence. Regardless of any connection to the narcotics investigations, Mattingly said police weren't there to act as judge, jury, and executioners that night. He states he was simply defending their lives against gunfire coming at them. But Mattingly wanted to know that people weren't at Breonna Taylor's house by complete happenstance. There's a reason the police were there that night, he says. And if you're a law-abiding citizen, the only contact you'll probably ever have with the police is running into them in the convenience store or maybe you get a speeding ticket. Other than that, unless you know them, you're not really dealing with the police. And he states that's part of the problem because the people right now think that this is all injustice and all these people who deal with the police is in some sort of negative connotation. So naturally their view of the police is going to be skewed and not good. Mattingly goes on to state that the detectives wrote an affidavit seeking the warrant that he had verified through a United States Postal Inspector that suspected drug dealer Jamarcus Glover had been receiving packages at Taylor's home on Springfield Drive that could contain drugs and cash. A postal inspector disputed Jane's claim, who later admitted it wasn't true. Mattingly said he believes that Walker knew the police were at the door because, frankly, the way that the police knocked that loud and they announced themselves, he says people could not have known it wasn't the police. Mattingly said that he gave the interview because he didn't want people to think that he was, in fact, hiding. He thinks he's done nothing wrong. He's completely justified, and he is getting ready to retire once the internal investigation is finally complete, as he's hit his 20-year mark of service. Mattingly had some very sharp criticism in his interview to Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher and his administration. Mattingly apparently begged the mayor's office to release evidence or factual information, but was told by officials they didn't want to set a precedent for future cases. Mattingly apparently said, you're willing to let the city burn down to not set a precedent for another case? A lot of the flames that have come up, a lot of the issues that have come up could have been diverted. Now people still have a problem with it, and it's coming out, and now there is so much distrust. Some of the facts that Mattingly believes need to be clarified is that Taylor was not asleep, and Taylor didn't know Jamarcus Glover, Taylor's ex-boyfriend, who is a main target in this narcotics investigation that led to the attempted search warrant of Taylor's home. So Mattingly has a lot of issues with the mayor and his administration regarding just not letting the true facts come out. Now, a lot of people have differing opinions on this particular case. We've put up the testimony that was presented in the grand jury testimony. You can see that in the playlist below. It's the entire grand jury proceedings. You can take a listen to it and decide for yourself. The fact of the matter is, here at Crime Talk, we want the facts. We want all the facts. We don't like when people withhold facts that should be released. These people work for us, the public, and it's public information, and they need to release it so that we can make an informed decision on whether a crime was committed or it's just a terrible, awful event. But we need the facts, and people sitting on that for their own political purposes is absolutely wrong. Next on the docket, one of the grand jurors who heard evidence in the Breonna Taylor probe is speaking out. As you may recall, it was a grand juror who wanted to be given permission to speak to the public so that they could talk about what took place in the grand jury proceedings. As you know or should know by now, grand jury proceedings are secret, and the grand jurors should not be allowed to talk to anyone pursuant to law. You have to get permission to do that. And grand jurors want to speak out, and they're claiming that the grand jurors were never presented information related to any murder charges related to Breonna Taylor. Now, we've talked about this in the past. Of course not. The prosecution is the one that presents the case. And so whether a case is being charged and going to a preliminary hearing in front of a judge or being presented to a grand jury, neither the grand jury nor the judge decides what charges are appropriate and what charges go forward. The grand jury only decides if there is appropriate evidence for the charges presented. A grand jury is not their own investigative body that says, hey, I think that we need to charge something else. It doesn't work that way. Like it or not, that's the way it is. That's the law. I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. So I get people's frustration. We have the proceedings. I have not heard anything in those grand jury proceedings that makes me think that there was anything illegal or any sort of misconduct that took place in those proceedings. And I would urge anyone to search the internet. The people have actually listened to those grand jury proceedings. There's nothing in there that was nefarious in any way whatsoever. That's the thing about the legal system. There's always someone that goes away unhappy. Next on the docket, a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for your background subscription service. We use this in our law firm every day. We use it to search information on witnesses. And you would not believe what comes up in people's backgrounds some days. Well, when you get a background search, when millions of records are searched literally while you wait, you get a report. And it has information regarding email addresses used, phone numbers used, social media, criminal history, including sex offender registration. It's going to include information regarding property records, marital records, divorce records, as well as judgments and bankruptcies. That's the type of information you need to know when you're dealing with people. We need to know when we're dealing and assessing credibility with people, and that's why we have it. That's why we use it. You should have it, and you should use it too. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, here's a guy who's going to be hoping that nobody runs a background search on him. A now former Orange County Sheriff's Deputy, Orange County in the state of California, Christopher Daugherty. He's 37. He's been fired from his position. And guess what? This is odd. He allegedly armed his daughter with a rifle and told her to shoot anyone who walked onto their property. Why must he have somebody there protecting him? Well, apparently, now former police officer Christopher Daugherty was going to perform an exorcism on his son and told his children that the home had demons in it. Now, the police were ultimately called. They found Daugherty armed with a gun and his daughter lying down in a shooting position while holding a rifle. Another child, in fact, had a taser. The daughter was given the rifle, a bulletproof vest, and a Kevlar helmet. He ordered her to hide in the bedroom while keeping watch. The girl also said that she woke up earlier that morning and Doherty told her that they needed to burn possessed demons in their house. Doherty was arrested and subsequently admitted to a hospital for a psychiatric evaluation. Clearly, something is going wrong in this particular situation, but you can't have kids being armed to shoot anything that comes through the door. Apparently, the young girl told the police that she trusted her dad, and if anyone had come through the door, she in fact would have shot them. Thank goodness she did not. Now, Mr. Doherty, if he is released from court, he'll be barred from seeing his children and obviously having any weapons. Sounds like somebody was having a breakdown for sure. Hopefully he gets some help. Terrible situation all around. Next on the docket, Jose Baez is on a new case. He is on the case of Dr. William Husel, and he's accused of ordering excessive painkillers for patients who died shortly thereafter at a Columbus area Mount Carmel health system in Columbus, Ohio. The good doctor has been charged with murder in 25 patients' deaths accused by the prosecutor of misconduct, and the defense is now asking that the indictment be dismissed. Now, Dr. Husel has previously pled not guilty and maintains he was providing comfort care for dying patients and not trying to kill them. His defense team includes Jose Baez, obviously the attorney most widely known for past clients such as Casey Anthony and Aaron Hernandez. Mount Carmel's review concluded that Husel's ordering excessive painkillers for about 36 patients who died over several years. Colleagues who administered the medication weren't criminally charged, but the hospital system said it fired 23 nurses, pharmacists, and managers after its internal investigation and referred various employees to their respective state boards for review for possible disciplinary actions. Now, Mount Carmel has reached settlements totaling $16.7 million over the deaths of at least 17 patients, and there's still many lawsuits remaining. Husel has also, along with other employees that were fired, filed defamation cases against the hospital for allegedly spreading a false narrative about what, in fact, happened. We'll see how that goes for the good doctor. This will be an interesting case decided by the experts. Was this a case of compassionate care or murder? Let me know in the comments below what you think. Next on the docket, guess who's going to court? That's right, Scott Peterson. Scott Peterson is scheduled to have a court hearing this Friday, and the issue that is before the court is to determine whether Mr. Peterson will need representation by the Public Defender's Office or if he has retained his own counsel. The hearing will take place at 8:30 on October 23rd in Department 6 of the Superior Courts there in Stanislaus. It's unclear whether he'll actually appear in court or via WebEx, obviously given the ongoing COVID-19 matters going on in the world. This court appearance will come, and the reexamination comes 2 months on the heels of his death penalty being overturned in connection with the murder of his wife, Lacey, and unborn son, Connor. The San Mateo Superior Court judge will have to decide if prejudicial misconduct by a juror occurred during Peterson's 2004 trial. One of the jurors during the trial, a Rochelle Nice, is accused of committing misconduct when she failed to disclose that she obtained a restraining order against her boyfriend's former girlfriend in 2000 for harassment. The juror was pregnant at the time of the restraining order but denied any involvement in any crime-related incidents when asked during jury screening. I find it a little hard to believe when she's there for voir dire asking questions that this little incident just happened to skip her mind. When all jurors were asked if they were ever victims of a crime or involved in a crime or a lawsuit, Nice answered no to both questions. Issue before the court is whether juror number 7 committed prejudicial misconduct by not disclosing her prior involvement with other legal proceedings, including but not limited to being the victim of a crime. Now, Ms. Nice was originally an alternate juror, but she was given a seat when another juror was discharged, and she just happened to write a book regarding her experience. Peterson's attorneys allege that Nice worked really hard to get onto the jury, and that she was willing to self and claimed that she was willing to serve despite her employer telling her she wouldn't be paid for the time off. Now, Ms. Nice has made certain statements regarding these allegations, and she basically accuses the Peterson defense team of lying in order to get him a new trial. She states, quote, "I did not lie to get on this trial for Scott Peterson." She claims she did not. She, her boyfriend's ex, never threatened to kill me, to kill my unborn child, or to beat me up. When I filled out the questionnaire, my situation never came into my mind because it was not similar at all. End quote. Like I said, I have a little bit of a problem with that story because during voir dire in a particularly high profile case, if you're asked, have you ever been involved in any legal proceedings? It's not, have you ever been involved in any legal proceedings regarding a similar case where someone's accused of killing their spouse and throwing them off a boat into the bay? Nope, I don't think that was the question. It was, what, have you ever been involved in any similar situation or any litigation? You have to disclose it, ladies and gentlemen. She didn't, and I wouldn't have thought about it a couple of years ago, but I'm telling you, Scott Peterson may actually have a shot at getting a new trial. We'll have to wait and see what the judge orders. Regardless of whatever the judge orders, somebody's going to take it up on appeal, and it'll probably be a couple of years until we actually have a decision that's final. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet Bradley D. Young. He faces charges for grand theft and shoplifting. And guess what he tried to do? He tried to get away with taking $994 worth of merchandise from a store by only scanning a couple of items. And what did he do? He had a Kool-Aid packet concealed in his hand, and he would scan it repeatedly for the items. And guess what? Those Kool-Aid packets go for 24 cents. So he tried to get away with that and maybe a few other items for a bill totaling $24.44, when in fact he owed $994.13. Store officials became suspicious when Young took a soda and a fan from a shelf and then returned them to the customer service, where he also received a refund for $9.48, whereupon they followed him. Needless to say, Mr. Young was now in custody. We'll obviously give him the presumption of innocence. Doesn't look good for Mr. Young. Once again, a teachable moment always comes out of the dumb criminal contestant of the day. First, ladies and gentlemen, we've told you before, we'll say it again, don't take other people's things unless you have permission to do so. If you do that, it is theft. And just because you get caught doesn't mean no crime has been committed. Fortunately, all the goods were recovered. The store is not out of that merchandise, which would simply pass those costs on to customers. No, it's still a crime. Think about it, ladies and gentlemen. If I steal your car without your permission, drive it around town, maybe wash it, even gas it up, is it still auto theft because I brought it back and returned it in better shape? It's still auto theft, ladies and gentlemen. You didn't have permission to take it. Keep your hands off of other people's things. Bottom line, thanks for watching Crime Talk today. We'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.